Monday, July 31st. This month that gives me so many days of my own has slipped away. But in it, I've gotten a lot of personal things done and happy things. Today was an intensely family day. Lucy and Pat and little Lynn had arrived on Sunday afternoon from Austin. And Linda Bird was back under this roof. He got in from London Thursday. So, naturally, this was the day for a family picture. In the last one, there were only four of us. Now there would be six. We never had a proper one made for the five of us just after the wedding. I was up early and started the day boldly with my diet of coffee and juice. Resolution dies somewhere around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Jean-Louis combed my hair about 9, and then I began the great operation of assembling the family. I would as soon try to gather the birds of the air. I seemed to be the only person really in favor of this operation, and the most cooperative is little Lynn. Finally, we decide on my blue Ben Zuckerman, and Linda is wearing an Ashes of Roses, very stylish slim line, and Lucy is in the pink dress that she went away in on August the 6th. And I get us all gathered in the yellow room. Oak is stationing us like a ballet master. Patient understanding Bob Knudsen taking the pictures. Lyndon striding in at the last minute, and you feel the urgency riding with him, and you hurry, hurry. Camera clicks 100 times, and then Lyndon says, "All right," and we march with him out the door. And downstairs in the West Garden, there are as many cameramen assembled as if Kosygin was back. I do not remember for any visiting chief of state as many. We march in a line across the lawn, Lucy holding little Nan, and then Pat takes him and throws him over his shoulder, very practice-like. And Lynn sleeps through it all, an absolutely adorable baby. And there are all the ladies of the press, like clucking hens. Lucy grins elfishly and says, "I don't know what it is about you all, but every time he sees you, he goes to sleep." Coming from her, there's no barb in it. Lyndon went on to his office. Pat took Lynn away, and Lucy went with Liz and the press into the library for a press conference. Afterward, Liz said she was marvelous. She comes across so true. She earnestly believes, and I think she's right, that when you're nice to people, they're nice to you. And that is her recipe with the press. Then Liz and I worked on Mr. Brandon's script, changing a few errors, elaborating a thing or two, like my walks along the river. We had a hamburger and kept on working. Then with Ashton on the mail and the fabric samples. Lyndon and I had reached the decisions yesterday quickly, so quickly that I wonder if he will remember them. But he said yes to them. So in calls to Mr. Dement and Herbert Wells, I wrapped up a lot of things. Somewhere in the middle of it, we got word that the president wanted Ashton in the dining room. He was having lunch, so we both rushed in. He likes to have company while he eats. He likes to have company all the time. Ashton is gentle and comforting. He enjoys her, and she makes herself available as much as she can. And I must be with him more. Knowing full well that while I'm there, a great part of the time he'll be on the telephone, reading reports, completely ignoring my presence, and yet somehow drawing some sustenance from it and missing it when I'm absent. The Martha in me makes me want to get back to the desk or to whatever my own projects are. I dressed quickly, and at 4 o'clock, something I had looked forward to very much took place, a tea for the ladies of the Texas delegation, the group with whom I have met for lunch once a month since 1937, the wives for the members of the House and the Senate, and wives of former members. Because summertime is the time to visit, and I thought there might be daughters and daughters-in-law in town, and even mothers. I had particularly invited them to come, and they had. There were 4 Cazins and 3 Cases. Mrs. Tom Connolly, still remarkably impervious to the years, had brought her 2 daughters. And Helen Mahon had Daphne with her, talking about what fun their children had had in the swimming pool. Mrs. Yarborough had brought her very elderly mother. And almost everybody had at least 1 daughter, and the Daily Garzas numbered 4. Jake Pickle's young daughter, Peggy, Mrs. Norris, could have been on a poster for the bright young girl of 1967. And Molly Thornberry, looking absolutely delicious, said that she'd been wanting to get out of the nest all her life, and now that she was out, a government girl in Washington, she was realizing how good it would be to get back. I stood at the door and welcomed everybody. And pretty soon, Linda came floating in, looking terribly elegant. and Wara Lynn, bless her heart, chirping around sweetly. I introduced her everywhere as my third daughter. And Ovita Cole Poppy in navy blue and white, serene, beautiful, very much what I would like Linda Bird to be when she is that age. Alas, I'll never achieve it. At one point, I clapped my hands and suggested that perhaps the daughters and mothers and maybe the wives of former members who had not been on the second floor before would like to take a tour with the curator, and I introduced Mr. Ketchum, and they all streamed out behind him and went to the Lincoln Room and the Queen's Room and the Treaty Room, and just as they were making their way back, and about even with the door to the Yellow Room, on their way down to see our own personal quarters, the West Hall and the Dining Room, Little Lynn made his appearance. That broke up the tour. Everybody came in to see him, and they all crowded around in a circle. He blinked unconcernedly and was good as can be, and now, half a century hence, when some future First Lady has a party for descendants of former presidents, he can come here and say that he received in the Yellow Room in 1967 in the arms of his mother, just as the granddaughter of President Grant said to me. Sometime during the evening, Lyndon came in and quietly made the circle a ripple of excitement following him. Especially the young girls, the daughters, looked up in amazement as he approached. I called for Bob Knudsen, and we did pictures out on the balcony of me and the family groups. And then the party was over quicker than I intended, by about 5:30, and Lucy was leaving for New York almost with tears in her eyes as she said goodbye to Little Lynn. I went to my room for desk work and telephone calls, and then at 8, Abe and Carol arrived, and joined by Ovita, we went out on the Truman balcony. Lyndon came, and the five of us had a good time, and everybody joined vigorously in the conversation. At one time, a lengthy exploration of the riots in Detroit, Governor Romney's statements and telegrams, and later his press conference, Lyndon's action, his speech of Thursday night, Cy Vance's presence, the constitutional ramifications, the 1-2-3 process of how a governor gets help from the federal government in time of a riot, and the 14 or so times during our nation's history when it has been asked for and sometimes refused. It was a very interesting evening. I remember at one point something Abe said about this country's whole handling of racial inequalities and injustices, and the monumental attempt we have made in the last few years to even things up. I gathered from what he said that the very fact that we had tried so hard and done so much the last few years might be the forerunner, even the cause, of this rioting now. And I asked him a question trying to frame that. He said, yes, it's like steam accumulating in a boiling pot. If you lift the lid, it comes out in a great whoosh that may be destructive. The other way to handle it is like they do in South Africa, where they don't even lift the lid at all. Sometime during the evening, he made a very amusing remark about a good friend of ours, with whom there was no cooling off place between his mind and his tongue. One of the things I've enjoyed most living here in Washington, in the White House, is good conversation and interesting assessments. Yeah. It's one of the fruits of the job. I remember what Andre Maillet said, sitting by me at dinner, when we were talking about the Rockefellers. It went something like this. The Rockefeller brothers are the finest justification of the capitalist system. I wish I could remember his words exactly for sure. It was nearly 10 o'clock when we went in for dinner, and I succeeded valorously in limiting myself to meat only and a little green salad, and felt very self-satisfied. My drinks had been only tonic water, no gin. And it was 12 o'clock when I said good night and went in for a brief rub and to bed. A subject that had been much on my mind over the weekend was our coming down off the mountain, our departure from this place. Perhaps it had been begun about a week ago by the call from Ashton that told me that the apartment at the Carlisle, the Tower of the Fairy Princess, would no longer be available to us. And a second note in the symphony was the memo that I had asked Clark Clifford to prepare and that I had found on my desk when I returned on Friday, the 28th. It was about state gifts, and the gist of it was that all state gifts to Lyndon or me or either of our children, if their value was over $50, must be considered the property of the people of the United States, and though they could be displayed and used during our term of office, either in the White House or in the summer White House, our own home, they should, after our term of office was over, be displayed in a place where all the people could see them, for instance, the Smithsonian or the Johnson Library. And at first I had a tremendous pang when my thoughts turned swiftly to my pearls from Mr. Sato of Japan, and then my beautiful blue pen from Costa e Silva of Brazil. I had really grown so used to them. Somehow, over the weekend, I thought and thought about it, and finally began to feel a sort of comfort in saying goodbye to them eventually, curiously light and free. And another note in the symphony was a phone call from Mary Lasker on Saturday. She was leaving for Europe, in which she said, "I'll be so glad when 4 or 5 years are gone, or whatever it is, and we can do what we want to do." She was referring to when we were out of office, of course, and it pleased me that she should even think of it and would look forward to us doing things together. I know I shall say goodbye at that time to many of the friends of these days, but I like to think that Mary will be one of those I won't say goodbye to. And then, on Sunday, there was a poll that showed a distinct downward trend in the number of people who approved of Lyndon's handling of the war in Vietnam. All signs pointing to the day when, will it or no, we will no longer be here. Our own decision, our hopes, our determination, we know, but how to tell it to the world and when? In September, as John Connolly says, or not until March of 68, my own idea, and in it Abe concurs. Nevertheless, it does seem the leaves of autumn are falling rather early, since there really are 18 months left to this term.